This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As you've probably heard, a gunman killed at least 29 people on the campus of Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia, earlier today and injured at least 20 more. The shooting is over now. The gunman is also reported dead. Stay tuned to NPR News for updates. But our focus this hour is on cancer, and specifically on my cancer. Leroy Sievers opens his blog with the line, "After that day, your life is never the same. That day is the day the doctor tells you, you have cancer." For the past year, his blog, My Cancer, has drawn readers from those who've listened to his commentaries on Morning Edition and from a widening net of contributors. Leroy Sievers, former executive producer for ABC's Nightline, began writing about his disease shortly after he was diagnosed. This is, in fact, his second bout with cancer. He and his contributors write a lot about living with the beast, about not letting it define them, and about loneliness and about death. Today, Leroy Sievers returns to Talk of the Nation. This time, he's brought a lot of friends with him. We're in Studio 4A with some contributors to the blog here on a panel and more in the studio audience. And we know there are more of you listening today. If you're a cancer survivor or love someone who is, give us a call, share your story and your questions. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Leroy Sievers is with us here in Studio 4A. Nice to have you back on the program, Leroy.
Thanks for having me back.
And we're going to do our best to sort of recreate the My Cancer blog, where discussions often begin with the remarks of the moderator. So let me begin by asking you, Leroy, how do you respond when friends and acquaintances ask you, how are you doing?
That's a much tougher question, I think, than most people realize. I see people laughing out there. You have to make an instant judgment as to what kind of answer to give. There are some people that want the truth and nothing but the truth. There's some people, at least for me, that get the truth whether they like it or not. And there are other people that you have to figure out how much they really want. Some people want to hear you're fine. Some people want to hear it's all going to be okay. I was at a party recently and a woman came up and said, "How are you?" And I did not know if she knew or not. So I didn't know if I should just say fine, which if she did know would be insulting. On the other hand, if she didn't know and I said, "Well, gosh, I have cancer," that would not be normal party chatter.
No.
So you go through this very quick, and hopefully it doesn't seem that – I mean, hopefully it's not that long.
Mm-hmm. And do you have the sort of the acquaintance version and the three martini version?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
No, you have a bunch of different versions, and you just pick the one that seems the most appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And so let me ask you, how are you doing?
I'm actually doing pretty well. I have, as best we know right now, no active tumors. It is a roller coaster ride. Earlier in the year, around January, February, my case was not going well. The chemo had failed. We were really talking about this summer is probably about the end for me. Found a new procedure called radiofrequency ablation. The doctor quite cheerfully said he'd simply go in and kill the tumors. He did. I know it's in there somewhere. It's just right now I think the cancer is too small for us to see.
Mm-hmm.
But right now I have no active tumors, something a position I never thought I would be in.
And that's, again, something that you and others have written about on the blog, the idea that, hey, hat's in the air. But on the other hand, there's always a shadow on the hat.
Yeah, everyone else is sort of hats in the air. I mean, everyone was writing and saying, "Congratulations, this is great." And I felt bad because I was one of the few people saying, "Well, not really. I mean, great for now. I hope it lasts for a while." I think once you've been through it a couple of times, you get a little more guarded. I'm pretty certain it'll come back. And so you try to protect yourself, I think.
Mm-hmm. What has been the experience of, you know, you've been a journalist your whole life, as we heard in that billboard, as opposed to, you know, sort of talking to people about something, you've been hearing back. What's the experience of blogging about this been like?
Well, the great thing, I mean, being in television before, it's a one-way medium. I mean, we get to sort of preach from on high and tell people what we think, and nobody really gets to say anything. The great thing about the blog is you hear back. It becomes a conversation, whether people agree or disagree or want to add. One of the most interesting things about the blogs is a lot of people write in not so much to respond to anything I might say or someone else might say, but simply to tell their story. It's simply a place, I think, to say, this is what's happening to me. And I think that for a lot of people, it's hard to talk about. And there really isn't necessarily a place to do that.
Mm.
You come to the blog, it's a community where everyone has a lot in common, unfortunately. And it's a safer place to have that discussion.
Well, let's get some people in on the conversation, both here in the studio audience and out there listening. 800-989-8255 is the number to call, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org. Our guest is Leroy Sievers, journalist and author of the My Cancer blog on npr.org. And I'm going to have to see if we're trying to get a caller on the line. And I know we want caller two, but I think I need the mouse. This one works with the mouse. Let's try it again. Ah, there, Nancy. Nancy's on the line from Hamilton, New Jersey.
Hi, Leroy.
Hi, Nancy.
It's good to talk to you. I was hopeful to get into Washington to meet you face to face, but unfortunately the weather didn't cooperate.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I think everybody's calling this the nasty nor'easter.
Well, I live on the banks of the Delaware River, and it's pretty darn nasty.
And what's up with you, Nancy?
Well, I'm one of the regular contributors to the blog. I found it probably shortly after Leroy started writing it. And, I found that he had a really intelligent and open approach to the subject, and that it was a really great public forum for people with cancer, without cancer, who love somebody who has cancer, or who take care of people with cancer to talk about it. You know, I've said in the blog a few times that in the getting on for 30 years that I've been a nurse, the whole dialogue about cancer has changed so dramatically, and that I think Leroy's blog goes a long way to open the subject up, because it used to be quite a taboo. I remember when I was a young nurse working in a hospital that family members often would ask doctors not to tell the patient that they actually had cancer because, you know, they didn't want to talk about it, or they felt that the patient would be too frightened by it and would just give up and wouldn't be able to cope with having cancer. And, you know, that's kind of how it used to be.
Do you find you're getting better information now?
Oh, definitely. The Internet has changed things dramatically. One of the other regular sources of communication that I have is the blog at breastcancer.org, which is a site that's run out of Philadelphia that gets chatters in their chat room from all over the world, literally. I can be talking to somebody who lives in the town over at the same time I'm talking to somebody from Europe and the Philippines. And that site also provides a great deal of medical information about breast cancer and all its phases and treatment and diagnosis that's written by cancer experts. And there's a lot of sites that do provide really good information that's written by doctors.
Leroy?
Well, it's interesting. I have to be one of those people that doesn't look for more information. I think that sort of divides the people. Some people go on the Internet and want to know as much about it as possible. My questions are a little more direct. It's, what's it going to do? What's it going to feel like? What's life going to be like afterwards? And then we'll sort of move on. I'm not particularly interested in how the cancer works or things like that. Some people want to know as much as possible about it. But Nancy's absolutely right. There are still a lot of people that don't talk about it. I think the posts that sort of break your heart are the ones that say, my husband, wife, father, mother wouldn't talk about it. We didn't know what they were going through. And as difficult as it is, when I first was diagnosed, my surgeon said cancer means that more people are going to want to talk about stuff you don't want to talk about than you can believe, which is absolutely true. You have to talk about stuff that's pretty intimate and pretty difficult. But I think you owe it to the people in your life. I don't think you really have a right to freeze them out.
Nancy, thanks very much for the call. Good luck.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Dr. Krupali Tejura, who wrote to Leroy in March asking for advice on how to be a better doctor for her cancer patients. Leroy wrote a blog post on that subject, and his readers responded in droves. Almost 80 wrote to offer suggestions. Dr. Tejura now joins us from Emory University in Atlanta, where she's in her final year of residency training in radiation oncology. Nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much. It's very nice to be here, and it's great to talk to Leroy live.
Hey, it's great to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for posting that. The responses that I received were amazing and so insightful. And it's always nice to get the patient's perspective on what we can do better. And I don't think that question is asked often enough.
Yeah, I understand, though, you were, in fact, consulting with a patient who said, you might want to read this blog at npr.org and called up My Cancer and found yourself on it.
Correct. The story goes, you know, it was early in the morning. We were just discussing the day. And he said, you know, he was interested in writing about his experience with cancer. And I said, you know, there's a gentleman on NPR named Leroy Sievers. I Googled it, found the, you know, it was 3 days after I had posted the question, not knowing that it was actually a blog post, and we went about reading the blog together, and he goes, wait a minute, doctor, that's you. And my jaw dropped to the ground, and I almost, you know, I started tearing up from, you know, just seeing that, and also the immense response that it generated.
Mm-hmm.
Because that dialogue is quite important. Doctor-patient relationship, I think, is one of, you know, it's a privileged relationship.
And what have you learned?
I've learned, you know, I think I'm single, however, you know, a doctor-patient relationship is similar to a marriage where trust has to be a two-way street, and, you know, people are fighting as a team. And I think open communication with the patient, also knowing that cancer doesn't define the patient, you know, they are more than the cancer. I try to talk to my patients about life in general, whether it be, you know, their new grandchild or, you know, American Idol versus anything going on with sports. I think that they need to be treated as people.
Dr. Tejura, stay with us, if you will. Leroy Sievers obviously is going to stay with us. We welcome your contributions, 800-989-8255. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org. We're going to take a short break, and of course we're continuing to follow our top story today out of Blacksburg, Virginia, where a gunman killed 21 people this morning at Virginia Tech University. What we know, two incidents, one early in the morning at a dormitory, another about 2 hours later at Norris Hall, an engineering building. The gunman has reportedly been killed. NPR will bring you more information throughout the day as we learn it, so stay tuned to Talk of the Nation for developments as they warrant. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, where we continue to follow the shooting this morning at Virginia Tech, where more than 20 people have been killed. That number may grow. More than 20 others were wounded. The gunman is also reported dead. The president of the university described the shooting at his campus as a tragedy of monumental proportions. President Bush, according to a spokesperson, is horrified by the news. NPR News will have more on this story throughout the day. You can also find updates at our website at npr.org. Our focus this hour is on cancer and the community Leroy Sievers built on his blog, My Cancer. Our guests, of course, include Leroy Sievers, a veteran journalist, author of the My Cancer blog at npr.org. Also, Dr. Krupali Tejura, currently in her fifth and last year of residency training in radiation oncology at Emory University in Atlanta. If you're a cancer survivor or love someone who is, give us a call. Share us your story and your questions. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. Let's get a question from the audience here in Studio 4A to my left.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
My name is Elena Witter. I am also a longtime reader of Leroy's blog. I have to say that I start each day at my desk going to npr.org and reading Leroy's blog. What Leroy talks about to me is so personal, and things that I've spoken to family and friends about, and because you are such a wonderful writer, you put into words what many of us cannot express. I am an 8-year survivor of breast cancer, and 4 years ago it metastasized to my bones, a story very similar to Elizabeth Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
I am here as living proof that people with metastatic cancer can live a long, productive life. So my question to you, Leroy, also as a member of the media, is how do we change the world's perception that a diagnosis of metastatic cancer is not necessarily a death sentence? Because I feel that many people, when you say your cancer has metastasized, they basically say, how long have you got?
Mm-hmm.
And that's never a question I've ever asked my doctor. Here I am 8 years later, working, productive, mother, wife, productive member of society, relatively healthy. And you and I are living proof that it is not a death sentence.
You asked a general question, but I did want to ask Dr. Tejura just a question. Metastasized, doesn't that mean it's just spread throughout the body?
Metastasized means that it's away from the primary organ, so it has spread to other sites of the body from the primary site.
Okay, just wanted to get a definition for those who aren't as familiar with the terminology as you are. Leroy.
It's funny, how much longer do I have is the first question I asked. And then you realize after you've been in this a while that the answer is pretty meaningless. It's interesting being on the other side sort of journalism. One of my frustrations, and we saw it in the coverage of Elizabeth Edwards and Tony Snow and Fred Thompson, you never hear from patients. You see lots of experts. Especially there was a story recently where it said cancer deaths are down. And the anchors came on and said, boy, we've beaten it, and this is great, and we've turned the corner. You never heard from the people in this room, from people like us who are living with it. And I don't know how you get past that, quite honestly. I mean, I think that's a failing of journalism as a whole. And that, I think, is the only way to do it, is to see people like yourself who've been living with it for years. Most people still think, and metastatic is a term that most people don't know, I think most people hear cancer and think death sentence anyway, which is surprising given the number of people certainly who are affected by it. I think it's just going to take time. I mean, it was a generation ago nobody said the word. Now they're saying the word. Hopefully in another generation people will understand it. Journalism tends to sort of follow behind, and it'll take a while to catch up.
Dr. Tajura, is that the first question cancer patients ask you? How long do I have?
You know, it really depends on the patient and their mentality. Some are too afraid to ask. Some ask but don't really want to know. You kind of have to gauge each personality differently. I really don't like to give patients numbers per se, because every patient is different and each disease site acts differently. And, you know, I really never want a patient to lose hope. Because, you know, you can say 6 months, but you may be here, for example, like the other person in the studio audience says she's here 8 years later.
Right.
And you can't really, you know, it's all or none.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always want to give my patients, you know, the all or none attitude where we're going to fight this, we're going to do this together. You know, and if it does come to the point where, you know, it is kind of at a terminal stage, then we will have that discussion, but it's on how receptive the patient and their family are to it.
Let's get another caller on the line, and let's go now to Marty. Marty calling us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
Hi.
I went through several stages of breast cancer at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York, where I lived for the last decade. And the people there are amazing, first of all. I'm still friends with my surgeon and my oncologist. But I've got a real problem with the victimization of cancer patients. I haven't read your blog, sir, but I have a problem with the term my cancer as opposed to the cancer. And it was really interesting, while we are all waiting in radiation, there's this area in breast cancer area up at Memorial where we tended to divide ourselves between the positive people and the poor me people. And the positive people, the people with half faces and no noses and just horrible situations with this positive attitude as opposed to the poor me's on the other side. And I've got a real problem with people owning it as part of themselves as opposed to just another stage of life.
I guess that one's to you, Leroy.
Yeah.
I was hoping to dodge that one. You know, it goes through a number of things. My cancer is simply a title we picked on in part to show that it's personal. I'm not writing about medicine or cancer in general. It's simply about my experience. Actually, the title we all liked was Chemosabi, which I'm not sure that everyone else would have appreciated, but I thought was the best. You know, there's a difference between saying my cancer and saying poor me. I don't think – I've rarely met anyone that says poor me, quite the opposite.
Then you haven't hung in the radiation area.
Well, actually, I have. And I think most people are pretty tough and have come to grips with it in a way that I don't think any of us thought we could or would before we went into this. It's amazing what you can cope with. But again, I don't remember running into someone who was feeling sorry for themselves. We all have bad days. We all have tough days.
And you're an oncologist?
No, actually, I'm a cancer patient.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem. It's a tough group.
The people that wear those pink ribbons like a badge of courage of some kind?
Look, whatever.
It's really rough here, I know.
Whatever helps people.
I think he's wearing a Timex as a badge of poorly paid journalism.
Exactly.
But, you know.
Whatever helps. If wearing a ribbon helps you, great. If Johns Hopkins sells mugs and T-shirts that say cancer sucks, I think those are great.
I love that.
You know, anything that helps you, any statement you want to make, I think is terrific. It's however you deal with it. I'm a little less reluctant to judge someone else. I know what's happened to me, which is why it was my cancer. It's my blog, so I get to call it whatever I want. But, you know, everyone else's experience is similar but different. So I think judging someone else in that is pretty tough to do.
Okie doke.
Thanks for the call, Marty.
Uh-huh.
So long. Gretchen Hoag reads the My Cancer blog every day, often posts comments. She was 46 years old when she was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer in September 2005. She had a mastectomy and was treated with chemotherapy and radiation and is currently cancer-free. And she joins us today from the studios of member station WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where she's a piano teacher. And Gretchen Hoag, nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Nice to be here.
And how did you discover the blog?
I heard Leroy on the radio, I think, probably late June when he started writing every day. And, you know, he referred to the blog, so I went to the website and started reading it right around then.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it works? Well, you know, you've not just been a reader, you've been a real member of the community. You've been a regular contributor.
Yes, I think, as I've said, I think that the blog creates a community like I haven't experienced otherwise in my, you know, own little cancer journey, just because it is so big, but it's also sort of whatever you want to make it. Mm. You can read it every day if you want to. You can comment if you want to, but you also don't have to. But for me, just the knowledge of all those people out there who are experiencing so many things that I was, that I had not read or seen anyplace else, and it just gave me an immense amount of comfort to read those things and go, oh, so there's other people who feel just like I do.
And in a way, they're familiar strangers. Is it easier to talk to people in a way that you know, but you don't?
I think that's a big part of it. You know, we know this little part, little bits and pieces about each other, but we don't necessarily need or want to hear everyone's whole story. But because we share this, you know, this one, you know, kind of yucky thing.
Yeah, and I was thinking particularly where you were blogging about your concern that if you'd been less lazy, your word, and gone to get more regular checkups, they might have found the cancer sooner.
Yes, that was something that has really haunted me from the beginning, and I have never asked. I tend to be like Leroy. I'm kind of I want to know just as much as I need to know and not much more, and I've never asked my oncologist, what if I had gotten a mammogram 2 or 3 years ago? Would it have made a difference? Partly because I just thought that there's no good answer, and that's a tough position to put her in. And I did. I wrote about that on the blog, and another contributor to the blog, Doris, wrote in and said, hey, quit beating yourself up about this, because I had been having regular mammograms every year, and it had one actually 3 months before my cancer was diagnosed. So you don't know. And that just meant the world to me.
Stay with us. Let's get another question from here in the studio to my right.
I think Mr. Severs has shown that one of the greatest resources that we have as cancer patients, my name is Mitch Berger, by the way, I have carcinoid cancer, is each other. What we can share, what we can give to each other. And for folks who do want more of the nuts and bolts of living with cancer, you know, how do you deal with your insurance company, which is the best doctor? There is another really valuable resource online. It's called ACOR, ACOR.org. And it's a place where cancer patients can go, and it literally has a list of all the different types of cancers. And you can go on there and be in a chat situation with dozens, sometimes even hundreds of other people who have the exact same kind of cancer you do. And you can share all that minutia that perhaps some people don't want to share, but it's there if you want it.
Hmm. Leroy?
Well, I think one of the first things, I remember when I was first diagnosed, I mean, I was sitting in the ER, in the room, in the emergency room, the doctor came in, and you think you're the only one this has happened to. You've heard about cancer, you know what happens to other people, but boy, it was a shock, and my world was just that room. And gradually then you go into treatment. I see a lot of people nodding here. The chemo rooms, the radiation rooms, all of that, and you start to meet people, and the conversations are very different. You meet people in an airport, it's like, where are you going, what do you do? The conversations for all of us are, you know, what do you have, what are you taking, what are the side effects, what have you learned, what are the tricks, do you know a new procedure? It's a different world, and it takes a while to get into that, and once you sort of cross that border, then I think you realize just how many people are in there with you.
Hmm. See if we get another caller on the line, and this is Leanne. Leanne's calling us from Iowa.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm going to speak as a spouse of a my husband just recently died of small cell lung cancer, and it was 7.5 months from diagnosis to death. And, you know, I wish that I, as a spouse, would have been bombarded with a lot of this information that you're talking about, because it all happened so fast, and you don't have time to catch your breath. And my favorite saying is, it does suck. But I wish that I could have had a lot of this information or someplace, you know, to just get, how do I deal with it?
Right.
Any advice you can offer? Was that Dr. Tejora there that I heard?
Yeah. You know, cancer permeates not just the person it's affecting, but it affects the family members, you know, the clergy, the community. And there's social support networks usually at each hospital, or there's social workers that are available to talk to refer you to, you know, people who might be going through the same thing or have the same disease, because each disease site acts differently, and, you know, time may vary. So if you, for more information, I would contact the social worker associated with the doctors that you are going to, or ask the doctor themselves, and they might have more information for you to go to any community site or gathering.
And that was one of the things. The treatment seems to consume your life, and you have to get all this done, and we had such a short period of time that there was just so much that couldn't get done.
I think it is harder sometimes for the caregivers. As a patient, I know how I feel. I know what I'm going through. And the people that care about me, all they can really do is worry, imagine the worst, keep asking me how I feel, which I have a very low tolerance for, depending on how you feel. And I apologize for all that publicly. It's in some ways, it's much harder for you because you have to not just stand by, you do everything you can, but you really have to stand by and watch a loved one go through this nightmare.
Right.
And that's about as hard as anything I can imagine.
Well, usually when I walk into a room and I know that family members are around a cancer patient, I always say, I am treating one person, but you need to take care of yourself, because a lot of times they don't eat, sleep, because they're so worried about their loved one dealing with this. Mm-hmm. But we have to focus on that we're treating the patient, and you need to take care of yourself too.
Leanne, we're so sorry for your loss. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We're talking about the blog My Cancer. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Many of us watched as Elizabeth Edwards and her husband, presidential candidate John Edwards, disclosed that her cancer had returned and that while treatable, it is incurable. Many people applauded her decision to continue campaigning for her husband because she said she didn't want cancer to be her legacy. Elizabeth Edwards joins us now by telephone. Nice to have you today on Talk of the Nation. Thanks. Welcome to this conversation.
Hi, it's great to be part of this conversation. And like you, I feel terrible for Leanne, because I know from my own experience that sometimes it's easier to be the person fighting than the person standing beside the person fighting.
Mm-hmm. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm asymptomatic, so, you know, I don't know what's happening inside my body, but none of it's bothering me in terms of pain or anything.
Mm-hmm. And after that, I wonder, I look at Leroy here, who's just to my left, and maybe a little overweight, but otherwise he looks great.
That's cold.
And we've seen you
on behalf of Leroy, I beg your pardon.
Thank you very much.
And I wanted to say, Ms. Edwards, you look pretty good, too. I mean, do people have a hard time believing you've got cancer?
There is a little bit of that. I don't know what they expect, you know, since it's a disease that happens, except for skin cancer, basically inside of us as opposed to outside. People do get a certainly surprised look. And, of course, the treatment I'm on right now I'm not going to have, not expected to lose my hair or anything. So maybe I'll continue to fool people, mm-hmm. Which is good, because it's easier to treat me as healthy, mm-hmm. if I look healthy.
Can you stay with us? I know you've got a plane to catch.
Actually, we were going to do an event in Nashville. It's now changed because of the events at Virginia Tech.
Uh-huh.
And it will be a different event entirely, and I won't be taking part.
Okay. So we're going to have to take a short
break. I'm with you.
Great. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll hear more from Leroy Sievers and from Elizabeth Edwards and the other people in this community of contributors to his blog. We also have a close eye on the shooting this morning at Virginia Tech. More than 22 are dead, including the gunman. At least 20 others are hurt. The deadliest campus shooting in U.S. history. Much is not known as this hour, including the motives for the shooting and whether the police could have responded more quickly. Today, the university was struck with a tragedy that we consider of monumental proportions, said Virginia Tech President Charles Steger. The university is shocked and indeed horrified. The shootings took place 2 hours apart. We'll bring you more on this story throughout the day. Stay tuned to Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. An update on our top story today. Two FBI sources have told NPR that more than 30 people are dead at Virginia Tech University. Details of what happened there this morning are still emerging. Scott Hendricks was there. He's an associate professor of engineering, science, and mechanics at VaTech. He was on the third floor of Norris Hall, an engineering building, when he heard shots.
Well, I had had a report from my wife earlier that there had been a report of a shooting earlier on campus, and so I was a little on edge as it was, but then I was in my office and just started hearing shots. A few shots and then a lot of shots, and I probably heard 30 to 40 shots. I called 911, and the police were already aware of something, and then police started showing up, and SWAT teams surrounded the building, and I just watched for about an hour as things developed there.
The scene on campus was reportedly chaotic.
I could tell it was happening below me. I could see people crawling out of windows and crawling away and people running away. Yeah, I just locked the door and barricaded it. And shortly after that, we got news through the email system that said, lock your doors and stay put.
After the shootings, entrances to the Virginia Tech campus were closed. Classes have been canceled. Again, the latest numbers that we have, two FBI sources have told NPR at least 30 people were killed. NPR News will bring you more about the killings at Virginia Tech as we learn more. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, as a Senate committee grills Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez over the firing of 8 U.S. prosecutors, we'll talk with one of those fired and get updates on Attorney General Gonzalez's testimony. Gonzalez under fire tomorrow on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And today we're talking about cancer, more specifically Leroy Sievers, My Cancer blog at npr.org. Leroy Sievers is still with us, a longtime journalist who hosts the My Cancer blog. Also with us is Dr. Krupali Tejura, currently in her last year of training in radiation oncology at Emory University in Atlanta. Gretchen Hoge, a breast cancer survivor who reads and frequently posts comments on the My Cancer blog. And also with us, Elizabeth Edwards, the wife of Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards. And of course, we heard earlier this year that her cancer had recurred. And let's see if we can get a question from here in the audience in Studio 4A to my left.
Leroy, I'd like to thank you for being the focal point of communication for us cancer survivors. Secondly, I'd like to ask you how you feel.
aside from the overweight part, pretty good. That one stung.
That's my job.
I feel beat up, to be honest with you. I was sort of looking and counting up the scars and the procedures and stuff like that, and I've only really been going through this a year and a half, and you know a lot of you out there have been going through this for years and years and years, and just finally starting to feel that I can sort of start to rebuild my body. But you know, tired, I'm encouraged. I don't know how long it's going to last, but physically okay, but not great.
Well, my name is Jeffrey Shines. I'm a 10-year metastatic brain tumor survivor. And I'd like to ask you two questions. One is the statistics that they give you when you're first diagnosed. I didn't believe those, and hopefully no one else does. And secondly, since you're involved in communication and coordination, would you give us an opinion of a support group and how they could be helpful to those with cancer?
I did believe the initial prognoses just because I had no reason sort of not to. I mean, very shortly I had 4 or 5 that were all very different. And the doctors each time were very good at explaining these are averages. They're like insurance tables. They really have no bearing on your individual case. And so that helps. I mean, I've sort of kept track of them. And each time I beat one, I'm pretty happy. I have one more to go. I've beaten, I think, 3 or 4 of them. As for support groups, I think it depends. Quite honestly, I haven't gone to others beyond this blog. This turned into a support group far beyond when we started it. We didn't know what it was going to turn into, and it's become something far more important than I ever anticipated. So quite honestly, this is all I need.
Hmm. Well, thank you. You're doing a marvelous job.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can go to the microphone to my right.
Okay. Hi, my name is Jason Brightfield, and first of all, I'm a 25-year-old
two-time cancer survivor myself. And I really can relate. This is the first time that I heard about this blog was just a few weeks ago. So I'm not as up to date as on this, but I did blog myself when I was going through my cancer, and I can really relate to the last caller that was talking about the first, when her husband died, from diagnosis to, the end was just a few months, and it all just kind of flew by, and that's how it was with my first time around. Didn't have time to really reach out and find, any support resources, but the second time around, which was, just this past year, I started my own blog, which I wanted to touch on. One of the major things about that was not only the support that I got from everybody in my, support system reading my blog, but the fact that I didn't have to give the same information out a million times. Mm-hmm. When people would send an email and say, how are you doing? I would say, read my blog. It's on there. I didn't have to say, especially the details of treatment, and I had a stem cell transplant, everything. I mean, it was just so nice to be able to just have one area update it when I could, which was sometimes, daily, and sometimes I would go weeks without being able to. But I've also, being a young adult, there's a lot of unique issues that, facing cancer in your early 20s when you're kind of just starting out, and I've wanted to kind of just give a little pitch out there. I mean, there's a lot there's a community out there for everyone, I guess. And for young adult cancer survivors, there are several small communities popping up. And, cause we face issues like, normal adult cancer survivors face, but, also additional ones like infertility and employment insurance. I mean, we have a long life to live, and, I just thought that I would kind of bring that to the conversation.
I wanted to ask actually Elizabeth Edwards a little bit about that. You have, and I guess this is a curious expression, but I guess you have a celebrity cancer, and at the same time, there must be so many people so interested to know what you're going through. At the same time, you want to retain some privacy.
Well, I've sort of given up on the privacy part, like Leroy has, and it's actually very freeing to be able to do that, to talk about your cancer in a completely open way. On the other hand, for me, I also have another agenda. I have political things I want to talk about, and if I'm talking about my cancer, I'm not having a conversation about other issues in healthcare. I can move it pretty easily to, don't we need more funding, for research? But I'm less capable of moving the discussion to global warming. In that respect, it's an impediment. I don't honestly worry about my privacy. I signed away that several years ago.
Lauren Terrazano is a social services and child welfare reporter for Newsday, the newspaper published in Long Island in New York. She was diagnosed with lung cancer in August 2004 at the age of 36. Since October, she's given up a lot of her privacy, too. She's written a weekly column for Newsday called Life with Cancer. She joins us now from her home in New York City. Nice to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And how has writing your column changed your experience of life with cancer?
Well, I think it's been tremendously helpful to me as a patient as well, because I am able to write about a subject which I have firsthand knowledge, and it's amazing to be able to connect with your readers in such a personal way. Every week you're putting a little bit of yourself out there, and readers are responding to it. So in that sense, it's been very therapeutic.
Mm-hmm. I understand you had a similar experience to Dr. Tijourov of sitting, in your case, as a patient in a radiation center and seeing somebody read your column.
Yes. Actually, that has been very weird and interesting to see at the same time. I'm sitting, in a chair, and across from me is someone reading my column as they're waiting to go in for their treatment. Yeah. And, I've gotten emails from people saying that, people have been reading my columns before they go into chemotherapy, and it makes me feel good to know that I've had that kind of impact, because I was that person just a few months before, sitting very scared and alone in a waiting room, wishing that I had had that type of you know, column to read.
And I know you decided to write your column in part because you feel traditional journalism hasn't done enough to describe, well, maybe enough to describe the disease, but not enough to describe about living with the disease.
I think that there's a real void in traditional journalism in how we write about cancer. You know, and the media tends to compartmentalize it into either a sob story or a scientific breakthrough.
And
there are so many other issues that go unexplored. You know, the high cost, the human emotion associated with being a cancer patient. I mean, yes, there's angst and misery, but there's also humor at times. And I try to tackle the taboo subjects that a lot of people don't want to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leroy, let me ask you to join this discussion. How do you deal with the taboo subject of death?
It loses its mystery a little bit. I mean, death, whether stated or unstated, is a part of sort of everyday life for a cancer patient. On the other hand, you know, the response to that always is, well, we're all going to die, and we know that. The only difference, I think, for cancer patients is we have a little better idea of what's going to cause it.
Yeah.
Someone said recently in one of the posts I was writing about fear and the future and stuff, and they said, look, really what we're not – what the elephant in the room is death. We're not fighting cancer as much as we're simply trying to postpone our own deaths, which is really true, I think. I mean, we're trying to get that extra time. We're trying to you know, squeeze in that extra day or whatever it turns out to be. It's not so much we want to defeat cancer. We're trying to defeat death.
Mm-hmm. Lauren?
Yes, I tend to agree. I think that, you know, it's hard to tackle the issue of death. I think that cancer patients, and I've written this in one of my columns, have a unique perspective on the world. You know, other people don't see the bus coming for them. We, unfortunately, as cancer patients, do. We see it coming down the street, whether it's 3 miles away or 6 miles away. We know it's coming at some point.
Lauren Terrazano, we wanted to thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Lauren Terrazano writes for Newsday, the magazine, newspaper published in Long Island in New York, and writes a weekly column called Life with Cancer. We're discussing the blog that Leroy Sievers moderates and writes for called My Cancer, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another question to my right.
Well, I'm kind of surprised to find myself up at the mic because I'm like 12 years ago is when I finished my treatment for breast cancer, but I guess there are passionate feelings that endure. And so I have two strong reactions, and one comes off of the most recent conversation in it. It's this issue of the fighting and the struggling and the tackling of the illness. And, you know, maybe it's because I'm a woman, but I don't know. I was thinking it always bothered me. I was ready to like be like a green beret with the chemotherapy going through every little cell in my body. I was not going to do daisy fields and, you know, kind of strawberry fields forever about that, like get it out. But there's something about the struggling, the fighting that's always bothered me. And so I think for me it's like facing the cancer, like I'm facing cancer in my life. It's because it's facing mortality. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that brings all your loved ones to you is they don't want to lose you, but they also, it raises the issue for them about we all are going to die someday.
Gretchen Hoge, let me bring you in on this. I think you share some experiences with our questioner. Your name is, I'm sorry?
I'm Judy Byron. I'm an artist here in D.C.
Judy.
Yes, I think that the fighting analogy sometimes is not the best because as someone actually said on Leroy's blog recently, well then what does it mean if you lose? He actually had a comment one day that talked about this whole language of cancer, and I think that something that a lot of people liked saying was that we're dealing with cancer. I also like the facing cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you don't like to feel like you're fighting, you know, every day. You're just kind of living your life.
Right.
Let me ask you a question, and this may seem odd, but you describe Gretchen yourself as cancer-free. Cancer was an organizing principle in your life for a long time. Do you miss it?
No. I mean, I can't say that I guess my body is technically, as far as I know, cancer-free, but I think that once you have cancer, and this is something else that Leroy touched on at one point, I don't think that you can ever be completely free. The further out you get, maybe the cloud gets smaller. It's, you know, and there's more breakthroughs of sunshine. But you know, I have a feeling for the rest of my life there is going to be that little cloud just always hanging on that horizon, because you never know. I mean, yes, there's a the odds are, the percentages are in my favor, but someone has to be the 10% that has a recurrence, and you don't want to be, but you could.
Elizabeth Edwards, that's I guess that's you, that 10%.
It is me. It's interesting, when I was listening to both these last two comments, I have a slightly different take on it, and I do think that we are facing our mortality in a way that other people don't, and it scares people to think that they might have to, and in that way people want to turn away from you in a certain sense. But I think that it's not even so much, as Leroy was saying, so much as facing death, but facing the fact that we do not have the control, that this illusion that we controlled our lives and controlled our fates by eating the right thing or doing the right thing. I mean, I wasn't a smoker. I don't have any risk behavior. So this idea that we controlled what happened to us and what was going to happen to us is a hard thing to let go of. And when you were asking whether you miss cancer, once you have lost the illusion that you have control, you don't get it back when you're in remission or when you're cancer free. You have now come to this new understanding that you're never going to have that kind of control again in your life, or the illusion of it. And I think it changes us, and I think it makes us more open to our experiences that we have in a way that the people who haven't been through this or other life-threatening experiences, or who haven't had, honestly, for me, I talked to Sharon Rockefeller one time, whose twin sister had been killed lots of years before, and we had lost a son years before, and she said, "This damn disease hasn't taught me a thing that I didn't already know," you know, about the fact that you don't have control, and that nobody really knows how long they have. I thought that was exactly right.
Elizabeth Edwards,
it does teach you that.
Right.
Well, thank you all very much. And thanks to everybody here in the audience in Studio 4A who've gathered and shy at the beginning, and now they're all stacked up with questions to ask, and we have to get off the radio, and I apologize for that. But we want to thank Elizabeth Edwards for her time, Gretchen Hoag, who joined us from WUNC in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Dr. Krupali Tajura, who was with us from Atlanta, and, of course, Leroy Sievers. And you can follow his cancer at mycancer@npr.org. Thanks to you all. An update on our top story: the death toll at Virginia Tech continues to grow. A gunman opened fire at a dormitory in a classroom this morning. At a campus news conference earlier today, a gasp could be heard when police announced at least 20 were dead. Now the number appears to have reached 30. The gunman was also killed in what's the deadliest campus shooting in U.S. history. Details are still emerging. Much is still not known about what happened and why. Stay tuned to NPR News. We'll update you on this story throughout the day. I'm Neil Conan. You've been listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News in Washington.